The following is a Mediocre Movie Club production.
Welcome back to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. I'm your host, John Kissel, and with me tonight is Shane Settner.
Yo!
We are here for several reasons. We're here to discuss the end of Season 6 at the Mediocre Movie Club with our final trio of movies. We watched True Grit, Mary Poppins Returns, and Good Boys, currently in theaters. We're going to go over this season's mediocrities and who got nominated and who won. And we're going to talk about the MMC in general. You know, what does the future hold for us?
Yeah,
does the future hold for any of us?
I mean, got a little bigger than the joke I was about to make.
So. Are you implying there's something smaller than the Mediocre Movie Club?
Yeah.
Yeah, just let that stew. Yeah. There's nothing more important than some college buddies talking to themselves, essentially, about movies.
Yeah, putting a lot of work into conversations.
I can think of nothing more important. So we're going to get through our movies quick because we got a lot to talk about today. But
I just figured out, this is a shitty way of journaling. This is dumb.
Pretty much, I'm just like splashing my inner thoughts through the context of cinema out into the world.
You could be writing, Shane said this directly to me about True Grit.
Pretty much, yeah. These are collected on LiveJournal, I think. I don't know. Okay. One of these sites. But I didn't ask this program to do this, but it did try to transcribe one of our episodes. And it did it badly. So either we're safe from AI in the immediate future, or we're totally incoherent and talk over each other and make it impossible for a computer program to discern what we're saying. I think either possibility is likely, if not the accurate one. But our first... Shane's looking it up.
Sorry, I stopped listening to you.
Okay, it's totally fair. Just like LiveJournal.
Yeah, just like... text about coming up.
So okay, great. Our first movie is True Grit. This is the remake directed by Joel and Ethan Coen. We've done several Coen Brothers movies. This one is a Western remake of a 1969 movie, which was itself an adaptation of a Western book. The original starred John Wayne, whereas this one stars John Wayne equivalent Jeff Bridges. It's about the young girl whose father is killed and his murderer absconds out into Indian territory, and she recruits a U.S. Marshal and Texas Ranger to help her go chase him down. As far as differences between the two, I haven't seen the John Wayne True Grit. I think the main difference is that the Maddie Ross, who is the girl character in the Coen Brothers version, is an actual young girl, whereas she's like in her early 20s or something in the True Grit 1969 one. It seems like the plot is essentially the same. There are some minor changes, but I think that age difference is really important because it's just it's more impressive for like a young girl, like a 12, 13-year-old girl to be talking down grizzled shopkeepers as she does in True Grit than it is for like a 20-something-year-old woman.
I bet it wildly offends the boomers who watched the first John Wayne version.
It's supposedly pretty good. I don't know. As far as those Westerns go, like 1969, by that period, those were somewhat ending. He did win Academy Award, but that might have been one of those like career best kind of things. I don't think of John Wayne as like a fantastic actor necessarily, or like a heavily awarded one. It's like a Tom Cruise of his era, except doesn't believe in Xenu, probably. More Jesus than Xenu.
We don't know that. Maybe he's hanging out with Xenu right now.
Or maybe we all are.
Yeah.
Maybe we're all just souls in a hurricane.
When's the last time you were
in a volcano?
My
thetans checked?
Thetans, yeah.
I'm actually getting them checked right now. There's a slight hum. It's the spatial blah, 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 quantum nonsense. This is a totally real thing. That's just that flying across the microphone. So ignore. It's not the buzz of a fan. It's the hum of thetans leaving my body.
Yeah,
right. We both love this movie. I'm at a solid A. This is pure entertaining cinema without being... too lowbrow. It is squarely within the Coens' wheelhouse of tremendously competent, best possible version of a thing done to that extent. But as far as like, is this a Serious Man? Is this Barton Fink? Is this even Fargo? As far as like a whole bunch to talk about, not really. No, it's pretty straightforward.
I liked this more on my second rewatch. I actually liked it more than I did the first time.
I co-signed to that.
So, and that I think it's kind of a theme with Coen Brothers movies with me. So, I don't know. Like, I know I make fun of what's the nuts or
sure, Jeff Bridges, Rooster Cogburn. From what I remember, his accent was much derided by critics and commentators.
It's totally fine. I guess
totally. Yeah, it's not the worst thing in the world. Yeah, it's fine for the character. I can understand what he's saying, which is enough.
Is that better than Bale Batman?
No, definitely worse.
You think that the Bale Batman's worse, or
Bale Batman is unquestionably worse? Yeah.
Which that one doesn't even bother me either.
Not a fan. It's really distracting. They make him give long speeches in that voice.
I'm pretty sure that. I don't think it's worse.
Was that Bridges or Batman?
Batman's. John. Sure. Accent, yeah. Just fine. It's like a 5-year-old doing a bad guy voice.
That voice out of his throat, whereas Bridges' voice is a little higher.
Yeah.
Doesn't hurt. Yeah. Probably hurts somewhat. A little painful.
I can't use half my mouth.
I think that's the key. We're talking a little about Bridges, but the star of this film is Hailee Steinfeld in her first major role. She's gone on to not necessarily, she's been in a lot of movies. She hasn't really topped this. This for me is like an all-timer debut. This is one of the best performances in a Coen Brothers movie, I think, and they've had a shit ton of great performances, as we're going to talk about later in the Mediocrities. She's awesome. I think she's fantastic. Great.
Do you think they get all these good performances because... I mean, well, one, if you're going to work with Frances...
McDormand.
Okay, yeah. It gives you an advantage. But do you think it's just the way they write? It's such a natural way of talking, but also just slightly different?
I would push back against natural. Like, it is very mannered, their dialogue, a lot of the times. You wouldn't necessarily expect to hear their dialogue coming out of someone else's mouth. But at the same time, it's not like it's so eccentric or weird or non-human to where you wouldn't believe it. Like, it's a version of the world that you would like to live in. Like, I would love if people talk like this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not too smart, but it's all well-structured. I don't know if it makes sense at all. I can't really put a finger on it.
It makes sense. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. But, like, it's not just your McDormand's, your Bridges, your Damon's, who plays the Texas Ranger in True Grit. That are giving these great performances. It's all the way down the line. That the guy in the bear suit, who is a very specific character, who speaks like a bear, dresses like a bear, essentially is a bear. The shopkeeper that Mattie Ross goes back and forth with about the horses and who's owed what. Like, I've seen that guy's a character actor.
He's fantastic.
Yeah, he's great. He's just that single interaction. Like, this is an action Western. People riding on horsebacks and shooting guns at each other and... blah, blah, blah. It's got all that stuff, and it's got all that stuff to a high degree. But if this movie was just a 13-year-old girl reconciling her dead father's estate, not through vengeance, but through resolving deeds and contracts, I would watch that movie.
Yeah, maybe it's just that the way they react to violent situations and trauma is it's not quite just like, to run and scream and go bury your head in the sand, or it's not a Michael Bay movie where Will Smith just shoots someone in the head and says something funny. Like, there's like these funny human reactions, I guess, and the things are, I don't know, like, they seem like natural reactions, even if that's not exactly the way you would say things.
Sure, the plausible reactions.
Plausible reactions, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you, and it could be the way you wish you would respond to that, and not so, and again, like, not like Michael Bay where, you know, someone gets decapitated and Will Smith's like,
yes,
you know, I guess he lost his head. Strider, you lost your head. And like, someone just died.
I mean, that was the easiest possible, you know, pun sign off line to make there. But Michael Bay wouldn't go back and redo it. If he did, it would be to put like a girl in a short skirt bending over in the foreground. But he would accept the line.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, the Coens, they just always find the exact right way in. Even, like, this is not their most dialogue dense movie, but at the same time, it's not No Country for Old Men, which is very spare as far as the dialogue there. But every line feels purposeful. Even when characters are cut off from saying lines, like, again, this is an action western with action scenes in it, but the scene outside of the various Maddie negotiating scenes, the one that really sticks with me is the execution, the hanging early in the movie.
Yeah.
Where it's two white dudes and an Indian, and one white guy is, I think he's crying and he can't get any words out, and the other one is like, I'm just up here because I got a lucky. Everybody in this crowd, most of the people in this crowd, you may very well be unlucky one day too. And the Indian can't get any words out because they pull the hood over his face when he starts to give. That's just so, I've never seen that happen in a movie before. Like someone's final words being cut off. It seems like something the Coens, only the Coens would think of, because they totally de-romanticize those kind of deaths or violence, yeah, or that kind of, yeah, stuff. But it also seems totally plausible. Just this final fuck you to this guy before they kill him for whoever. Yeah. Who knows? Maybe he's a legitimate murderer. Maybe he borrowed a horse under false pretenses. Maybe he just got mistaken for someone else. I don't know. But they just give this character who has no name, very little backstory, a handful of lines, just this deep well of dignity. And then he exits the movie. And Triggered is full of that. It's a great movie. I think it's still streaming on Netflix.
Yeah.
Not my favorite Coen Brothers movie, despite it being, we talked about this with No Country. Like, No Country is essentially a flawless movie. It's a perfect movie. But I probably wouldn't crack my top 10 or my top 5 Coen Brothers movies. I would probably say the same thing for True Grit.
Yeah, I like this more than No Country. So,
I would probably agree with that. I would probably agree with that. Yeah. Yeah. Our next movie, Mary Poppins Returns, not quite as watchable.
It's like, yeah, we got two remakes. Why did this one get made?
This is, you know, credit to giant monopolistic corporation Disney. They didn't just choose to remake Mary Poppins from the 60s shot for shot. So
I guess this
good
is
for them.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
This is a legitimate sequel. They recast the role of Mary Poppins, which, you know, Julie Andrews, I think, is still alive somehow, which is amazing. Mary Poppins, that was 50 years ago, 55 years ago. She's still kicking. I'm surprised she didn't make a cameo, but here or there, this is the next generation of the Banks family. The son, who was a little kid in the 1960s version, is now grown up to be Paddington Bear. And his wife just died, and he has three kids, and Mary Poppins descends from the clouds again to help them out. And Lin-Manuel Miranda is not a chimney sweep, but a lamplighter. So,
yeah,
they really stretch themselves with your blue-collar Cockney dudes. I didn't like this.
It's fine.
I didn't like this.
This is a perfectly average movie.
I wouldn't quite go that far.
As a movie gets. Can you imagine throwing that much money at something?
I have no doubt that it did well. I do technically have those numbers in front of me. It'd be easy to find out, but I just don't care enough. I'm sure this was reasonably successful. It probably got nominated for a bunch of Golden Globes.
It was fine. Missed out on the Oscars. I just cannot imagine, like, I would feel like such a fraud taking money to make this movie.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I cannot remember a single song from this movie.
I can't either.
Some of that, when did I watch this? I watched this maybe like 2 or 3 weeks ago. I can remember lots of songs from the original Mary Poppins. I'm not a tremendously huge fan of that movie either. I think it takes more chances. And maybe it's because it's just been in the culture for longer, or maybe it was just in the background as I was growing up. When, you know, my parents jumped on those VCR cassettes when they got released from the Disney vault. But I do remember almost all of those songs. And I got nothing. This movie just leaves no impression.
I mean, it's such a generic bad guy. It's
compared to the original, which didn't even have a bad guy.
Yeah,
like, the dad was the bad guy. Like, the movie's about him. The bad guy here is an evil bank dude. Which, fine, whatever, but that's not what the original did in any way, shape, or form.
The only fun scene is like the ladders going up. I vaguely remember
I was checked out by that point. I just knew it was going to happen. Like you have the chimney sweep number from the original. You're going to have something with lamp lighters.
Yeah.
Just nothing. Like these kind of song and dance musicals, they don't do it for me. It's very rare.
They're
going to work.
MMC musical expert Brian Hartman.
I would love to know what he has to say. But I would have to, because he shows his kids like classic mid-century Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers musicals. Like you're singing in the rains, and I think his go-to is Seven Brides for Seven Brothers or whatever. I don't know if his kids have grown out of that or not. But
I don't think so.
There's just no way that this holds up against that. And I've never seen Singing in the Rain. It's widely regarded as one of the best movies ever made, but I just have a really hard time believing that.
He's 4 at the time, so he watched it.
I didn't want to rewatch 4-year-olds aren't making like the Sight and Sound list. Like critics do love Singing in the Rain for whatever reason. I don't fully understand it. But again, I haven't seen it. Yeah, okay. Yes, I do know that you guys have this Blu-ray or whatever. That they're into it, your kids?
I think they liked it. I think they'll
wanted to watch it again?
He never asked to watch again.
Do they stick around?
He also hasn't asked to watch Paddington again.
That's depressing.
Yeah. Come on, Jeff. I wanted to watch it. I made him watch it again one day. I was like, no, we were watching this again.
He seemed pretty into My Neighbor Totoro when I brought him to that. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a very low-key animated movie compared to kids are weird. I don't know. I want to, you know, you want to just click into that movie that they're going to remember, but who knows? Maybe it might honestly be Angry Birds 2.
Yeah.
The way that he was talking about it.
It's his favorite movie ever. So.
Yikes. Okay. So.
You failed.
God damn it. You try and introduce a kid who's not yours to some high-class, universally regarded Japanese animation, and it just doesn't take a depressing state of the world. Mary Poppins Returns. Why the Dead Mom? It's just built-in Disney pathos, Disney's mom, Lion King, so on and so forth. They live and die off of dead parents. Pixar does this too, but it's not synced in, I think. Like, the lesson that Mary Poppins is teaching the family, Is it more than get over it? Like, that was my impression as I was watching it.
I don't
it. Like,
remember that being there being a lesson to this movie other than rich people are bad.
Yeah, totally.
It's
fair.
All right, fair.
Yeah, you're not necessarily, I'm not against you if that's going to be your lesson, but it didn't seem like the dead mom obviously plays some part in these kids' like emotional lives. I just don't remember her advice being good in any way in dealing with a dead parent. It really, in my recollection, it really seemed like she was telling the dad to get over it.
How would you tell the kids to deal with a dead parent?
I would say, look, the assemblage of molecules that was your mother is dead and gone forever. You're never going to see her again. It's okay to be sad, but, you know, we still have to take our baths.
And here's what I did when my good friend Jeff died. I got drunk in a parking lot.
Yeah. I watched Inglourious Basterds and drank a shit ton of vodka.
Yeah.
So,
you're practicing.
Am I Mary Poppins? Yeah. Did I sail in here on an umbrella?
Yeah. Because audience at home, you can't see he's dancing on the desk.
Yeah. I got my little animated penguin friend. I got Lin-Manuel Miranda doing a shitty accent.
Yeah,
we're doing great.
Light on his feet. You can't even hear it.
Yeah. I most of my time spent ambulating is done like 3 inches above the ground, just lightly floating. I'm not trying to blow people's minds or anything, but I'm actually 5'7" and present as 5'10"
because
I'm floating.
Wow. Well, unfortunately, I actually am 5'7" and present as such.
Get some of that penguin magic.
Disney is scraping the bottle. Like, what do they do? They're creatively bankrupt. There's nothing.
It's hard to argue.
Coming out of the house right now. Nothing.
The latest film Twitter battle was about Martin Scorsese giving an interview, and the interviewer, for whatever reason, asked him about Marvel, about superhero movies in general. But Marvel at this point is so dominant that when you hear superhero movies, you're talking about Marvel movies.
Right.
And he was like, I tried, but they're not cinema. They're just not for me. They're not what I think of when I think of as cinema. They're thrill, they're theme park rides.
He said accurately.
Yeah, and people jumped down his throat, and the director of Guardians of the Galaxy was a man who, by the way, was fired and then brought back in, which is, you know, how valuable he is to this franchise. They can just sub whoever they fucking want in and out. He James Gunn responded to Martin Scorsese like, "Hey man, it's bad to comment on movies if you haven't seen them. Your movie Last Temptation of Christ was boycotted by people who did exactly that." And like, that's the difference between a Catholic militant organization creating violence in front of a movie theater and an old man in his 70s who doesn't feel like watching a raccoon, you know, shoot laser guns.
He wasn't even saying the movies were bad. He's just saying
they're not for me.
Yeah,
they're not for me. He's not saying abolish roller coasters. He's saying whose most recent movie was a movie about Portuguese missionaries in 16th century Japan, and who's making another movie about Jimmy Hoffa. They're not for me. I don't like them.
Yeah, like they don't have to.
It's not the end of the world. But like, Mary Poppins Returns did generate some tiny amount of Oscar buzz. And Marvel movies are increasingly aiming for that kind of thing.
Right.
So if they want to play in these sandboxes, you know, be prepared to withstand some criticism. You already make all the goddamn money in the world. You have to have universal praise now as well.
I was arguing with, I mean, we're off on a tangent now, but as we do.
Heaven forbid.
I don't know if I brought this up. I was arguing with a high school buddy about this. He's like, and he had to tag in somebody else. He's like, look, this guy doesn't think the last Avengers movie was any good. And I was like, no, it was fine.
It's fine.
It's just not Oscar worthy.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And they're like, why not? But I'm like, okay, do I need to go down through all the fucking plot holes and all the dumb decisions that everyone makes, all the blatantly manipulative stuff, the fact that Hawkeye survives over, yeah, like, just because they have a TV show and Black Widow doesn't, because Scarlett Johansson has other shit to do. Like, come on.
Yeah, this is.
What the fuck are we doing?
All movies are in some way commercial. There's economics involved, but the whole point of it is to fool me with the magic trick. Make me forget that. If it's in my head that like this person can't die because they've signed up for six seasons of a goddamn TV show, then your movie's broken.
Yes.
Your movie's fundamentally broken.
Yes. Okay, could be entertaining, and that's fine because the movies are made for entertaining, but it's also made for other things, so. Whatever.
Yeah.
So Disney is creatively bankrupt, is what we're saying.
Yes. Yeah. It's just they're going to run out of remakes, and then I don't know what they're going to do.
Remakes.
Probably.
Is the Addams Family remake coming out?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
I mean, I don't. That seems like a reasonable amount of time as far as trends and that kind of stuff.
We had a movie, then we had cartoons in the 90s, and now we're back to another cartoon.
It's been like 25 years. So yeah, great. New generation of the Addams Family.
It's just.
Who knows?
Yeah, right.
I don't know. Those Hotel Transylvania movies make a shit ton of money, too.
Yeah, it's got Adam Sandler talking like this.
Jeff Sutner's second favorite movie of all time.
Yeah, actually, he's like, I don't like his daddy.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, cultivate that taste. Save it. Save the praise for Angry Birds sequels. Which, again, in fairness to Angry Birds, I've now heard two critics that I respect say good things about it. So,
all
right. I'm flabbergasted.
I will be seeing it soon.
Yeah, no doubt.
I may take an edible first.
A movie you did not see is Good Boys, Gene Stupnitsky's Seth Rogen produced tween comedy about essentially super bad for sixth graders. It's almost the exact same plot, like a group of friends. In this case, a trio instead of a duo need to get to a party where they can, where one of them at least can make out with his crush, and the other two are along for the ride. And there are hijinks, and there are attempted beer smugglings, and there are, I don't know, one of their moms is big into like sex toys and dolls and that kind of stuff. And I don't know, there's lots of humor to be generated from that. It's pretty good. Pretty good. It's not as funny as I wanted it to be. I think TV shows like Big Mouth and Pen 15 and have just raised the bar for what's acceptable on the one hand. Like, they have various workarounds being animated or cast by adults play acting as 13-year-olds. Bridgerton is a great show. Everybody should watch it. That Good Boys just doesn't have. So it inherently feels tame by those standards. The Superbad comparison is not only apt plot-wise, it's like thematically. It's very similar. Like, you get the sense at the end of Superbad that this is the end of Seth and Evan's friendship. And you kind of get the same feeling out of Good Boys. It's really bittersweet. I appreciated that about it, that it wasn't just, we're best friends and we're going to accomplish this and everything's going to be fine and we're going to continue to have a lot of fun. They're just, they have diverging interests at 12. Like, one is into theater, one is into rule following, one is into girls. And there's just not a lot of overlap there, and they find their people and so on and so forth. This is my first deeper way into Good Boys. That's just really compelling, I think. They realize at a certain point in the movie that they're only friends because their parents happen to live next to each other.
Oh, that's something you're always into.
What's that?
Like, you're always like, yeah.
Why? Just very... whys. Why am I friends with anybody? Yeah. Like, why did things turn out the way that they did? Could they have gone differently? And yes, and then they're waking up to this, that, like, are they friends on purpose? Are they friends because their parents determined that they would be? Like, what if their parents didn't get along? And then all of a sudden they're not playing with each other at six anymore, and they're just not friends. And it's as simple as that. Just all of that sliding doors style, alternative realities and alternative ways to go down. But at the same time, there is, you know, you have these friends that you are, maybe are having less and less in common with, but at the same time, I don't know, maybe there aren't more people out there. That's a concern that lasts into adulthood.
Blair and I were just discussing this the other day. It's like the big changes we've had in the past few years with our friend group. Just like some people, it just naturally be like, we had kids and then that's it. Like, a certain amount of friends are just gone for my life. Like, people who I invited to the baby shower, I just don't see them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because they're not cool. It's just location, right?
And yeah. Access. That's yeah. it. And the Mediocre Movie Club, of course, and we're going to talk more about this a little later, but it has its roots in college. And a lot of people that I was closest to in college, the second I graduated, I basically never saw those people ever again.
It's really weird.
Yeah. We didn't suddenly have less of a rapport or less of an interest in each other or anything like that. It's just the proximity
yeah.
being broken.
And then when you travel 6 hours to their city, they're like,
oh, yeah, a lot of stuff has happened in the meantime.
They got kid shit to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's weird. Friendship's weird. It's weird. It's a good theme.
Something else that I found interesting in the movie that we can talk about without Shane having actually seen it is the kids are actually good kids. Like, they're not bullies. They're not obsessed with social media. With Jacob Tremblay is, like, the tamest, horny kid in an R-rated movie imaginable, but... You know, his one aside about that is about how he wants to hump trees all the time and doesn't know why. The film, it doesn't treat this innocent phase as something that needs to end. It treats it as something that is going to end without great effort on their part. Like, the movie is on their side. It wants them to remain the titular good boys. But just the world and their own brains and their own interests are conspiring against that. I mentioned a lot in my review this article I read on something called on a website called the Good Men Project about a sociological book that was written about how young boys like 10 to 15, 16 or whatever, somewhere in that age range, they have these like really emotionally intimate friendships, but they're conditioned out of them by their high school environments, by society in general, by the culture. Like boys, like girls are supposed to be the ones, you know, sitting face to face on their beds, sharing their deepest secrets, and boys are supposed to beat the shit out of each other.
Yeah,
have wrestling contests.
Yeah,
and that being a kind of grief that men play out over the rest of their lives, like they're grieving for those kind of friendships. Like, it's one thing to have like romantic intimacy. It's another thing to have platonic intimacy. That's really, I really got that off of this movie. Like, it ends with a tearful three-way hug. And you get the sense that, you know, one of them is getting into theater, you know, and they're not necessarily withholding their emotions in that age group. But one of them is going to go hang off with the cool kids who, by nature of being cool, aren't going to express themselves with to each other. And you really get the sense that this phase of their life is ending, and they're always going to look back at this period of time, these characters, you know, decades into the future, as a period of mourning, and they're going to grieve for it. And again, this is a movie where Jacob Tremblay naively gives his crush a gift of anal beads because he thinks they're a cool necklace. Very nice. So yeah, it's
like you're talking like this, and I don't know if I've ever heard you say your feelings on The Sandlot. I imagine they're negative.
No, I like The Sandlot well enough.
It feels like this is probably a less goofy version of, I guess, more raunchy.
Yeah, goofy, definitely more raunchy.
The Sandlot, where it's capturing like that last moment where they're kids. Mm-hmm. And they're just like,
yeah, doing the in the sand, shit. Like the epilogue of The Sandlot, where there's that weird aside about the kid who got really into the 60s and was never heard from again.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of hammers it home there too, I guess. But
yeah, and so many of those movies set in the 50s are inflected with that kind of the end of like Stand By Me, and
yeah,
other movies like that. Most recently, there is the feeling that this is as good as it's going to get for your friends. And then once it ends, you're like always struggling to get back to that point. Like Stand By Me ends with the line, I never had friends like I did when I was 12 or however old those kids are in Stand By Me.
Yeah.
And does anybody? And the point of this Good Men Project article was that's a choice. It's a choice to not form those kind of relationships again later in your life.
Interesting.
So yeah, that's Good Boys.
I should probably watch it.
Good Boy. It's good. It wasn't as funny as I wanted it to be. I really appreciated how short it was. It was less than 90 minutes. It was all contained within a day with like a montage-y epilogue, and solid, respectable comedy entry in a genre that Hollywood is increasingly having a more and more difficult time making.
It makes me also think of Arcade Fire's Funeral Album, where like the whole thing is grieving for loss of childhood, and like some nostalgia, but just like saying, the Wake Up song,
mm-hmm.
Says like someone told me not to cry, and it's like all the shit that. It's a good fucking album. And
oh yeah,
it's all about childhood, and I think it's their best album. But
I've never actually listened to the album, but I think it is heavily sampled in Where the Wild Things Are, which is one of my top 50 favorite movies of all time, which is very much about this raw emotional nature of childhood and saying goodbye to it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a theme that works for me.
Yeah, like I'm getting emotional right now thinking about it.
we're going to move into the mediocrities next.
Yeah.
Season 6, we watched 36 movies. If you click on the tag on our website under the reviews, you can go back and read all of those and listen to the corresponding podcasts. And we have several categories. We're just going to work our way through. I nominate these. We used to have a very complicated process that you guys were not into. I was very much into it.
I think
it.
I was participating.
It just took a lot of work.
It did take a lot of work.
Yeah. So I have nominated for categories that we came to as
tight,
a group.
Tight this year, tight.
Yeah, and then we vote on them. So these are mostly joke categories, but some are fairly straightforward. For instance, worst performance, we nominated Leonardo DiCaprio from The Beach, Alden Ehrenreich from Solo, A Star Wars Story, Carmen Ejogo from Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, a role so forgettable I don't remember anything about it.
Oh, it was so
nothing.
Fucking
I got
bad.
Nothing. I got nothing.
So bad, especially when you watch her in True Detective season 3.
Mm, just a wasted
so
opportunity.
So fucking
okay.
good.
Okay.
And then it's just, oh, it's such a bad role. Okay.
Josh Gad. I think we know who Shane voted for.
Yes.
Josh Gad in Murder on the Orient Express and Allison Sudol in Fantastic Beasts and Where
Did
to Find Them.
Did you vote for that?
No, I voted for the winner, Leonardo DiCaprio. In The Beach. Just a very outlier role for him that he was not able to pull off.
I think he was the problem, but...
Of course not. But, no, definitely not. But wasn't good.
I didn't even mind the Queenie character, so
I really hate that accent, especially when you add on like a flapper accent on top of it. Like, baby voice is already bad enough, and then baby voice talking about fucking Charlestons and whatever the fuck else. No, you've lost me.
I was fine. Like, I can't. I'm surprised not DiCaprio. I guess it shouldn't be. I hate that movie.
For worst movie, we nominated The Beach, Bohemian Rhapsody, current writing best picture winner, Green Book, Hold the Dark, and Unicorn Store. And Unicorn Store ran away with it. Like, this is a fairly dominant win. It's on Netflix.
Which one is it?
I voted for Bohemian Rhapsody. A truly, truly terrible movie.
Yes, I was with you.
Unicorn Store is Brie Larson's directorial debut. Very, very eccentric.
Oh, yeah.
Very indie. Very whimsical. And if those kind of things rub you the wrong way, as they do so many, then not great.
I hear you. I can't believe that's one of one. I don't know how Bohemian Rhapsody doesn't win because that was such a bad.
People, strangely enough, kind of like it.
I don't get it.
Some people like it. Some people, I think, are unable to differentiate between Queen music and the movie that contains all this Queen music. But here and there, the Ambulators Award for Best Physical Performance. The nominees were Michael Fassbender for Frank, Daphne Keene for Logan, Rami Malek for Bohemian Rhapsody, Ezra Miller from Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, and Brad Pitt from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And the winner of this one is Rami Malek. Again, people like that movie. We all went to U of E, the vast majority of us. I think he got, Fassbender all the way.
Okay.
The guy is under a mask the entire time.
I didn't see it.
And you know exactly what his face looks like under the mask.
I didn't see it, unfortunately. It's one of the one, that's like the one I
Frank
didn't
is
see this
on Hulu, I believe. It is wonderful.
It looks right up my alley, too, and I failed to see it, so.
Yeah. Congratulations, Rami Malek. I think the home field advantage really took you through on that
one.
Our next category is the Shane Settner Aggressive Accent Award.
And, hey!
And our nominees here are Jeff Bridges for True Grit, Boyd Holbrook from Logan.
I don't remember his accent.
It was just very twangy.
That's right, because he's Australian, isn't he?
I don't know.
I would buy that. Yeah.
Rami Malek from Bohemian Rhapsody, which we got to give credit to the mouth prosthesis that is painfully visible at all times.
Well, I'm backy.
I've got four extra front teeth. I can't even do it. I'm not even going to try. Let me explain exactly. Oh my God, I fucking hate that movie.
Before Rami Malek gets on stage, he thinks about his entire career.
Single-handedly saved Africa.
Yes.
Viggo Mortensen from Green Book.
Hey!
Eating a pizza here.
Eating a pizza, whole thing. Are you falling for the F?
And the aforementioned Allison Sudol from Fantastic Beasts.
I stole that mobster's hat. Still unclear.
And Viggo Mortensen walks away with this award.
Hey, how about that? I solved racism and won this award.
Green Book, just cleaning up. Can't stop winning awards.
Fuck you, people.
Joe Settner Headstrong Award. We have Ernst Toller from First Reformed, Ralph from Ralph Breaks the Internet, Bigfoot Bjornsson from Inherent Vice, Kingpin from Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and MacGruber from MacGruber.
I had a hard time between Ernst Toller and MacGruber on this one.
But, the character who lives closer to reality is the one who wins it.
MacGruber.
MacGruber it is.
Is that who you voted for?
I think so. Okay.
I was the Ernst Toller. I couldn't remember for saying that, but it was a tough one. That was one of the ones I was like,
The Tom Topper Artisanal Award for Best Food or Food Substance. Our nominees here are Scotch and Pepto Cocktail from First Reformed, a folded whole pizza from Green Book, a chocolate popsicle eaten lovingly from Inherent Vice, a giant plate of weed downed in a single take in Inherent Vice, Wolf brand rat flavored dog food from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and a human finger from Raw. This category, I think the nominees were really strong on my part, because it evenly split the vote, or did it, because a giant plate of weed pulled ahead. you know, I'm sure that wheat was lovingly crafted over hydroponically in a 1960s greenhouse. So I'm sure Tom would appreciate it being scarfed down in rage and spite by Bigfoot Bjornsson at the end of Inherent Vice. Our next category is J.R. Peters Award for the Best Scold. And our nominees here are Jong Soo scolding Jaime for dancing topless, Ray Foster scolding Queen about the inherent unplayability of Bohemian Rhapsody. Boy, was he proved wrong. Reverend Jeffers scolding Reverend Toller about his negativity in First Reformed. Balk the Industrialist telling Reverend Toller to mind his own goddamn business. And Justine, from also First Reformed, and Justine scolding her classmates about eating meat in Raw. And the winner here is Ray Foster scolding Queen about the unplayability of Bohemian Rhapsody.
Too much fucking Bohemian Rhapsody love.
Just like the Oscars, God, Bohemian Rhapsody and Green Book are cleaning up.
We are no better.
Our next award is the John Kissel Award for the Best Monologue. The nominees are Ray speaking to the kids about his cousin and High Flying Bird. MacGruber explains his romantic history with Kunth and his wife in MacGruber. Sheriff Bell describes his dreams to his wife in No Country for Old Men. Sheriff Bell is getting too tired for this job in No Country for Old Men. And Curtis explodes at a potluck dinner from Take Shelter. I'm going to take a break here as
I'm going to take my vote back.
That's too late. We're locked in. Okay, and the winner is Curtis exploding at a potluck dinner. I was considering reenacting this monologue, whoever won. But I'm not going to do that because this monologue won. I would probably wake up your entire goddamn family.
Well, you also brought up just like reenacting this scene in front of my softball team without them knowing, just to stick true to the movie earlier.
Sure, yeah. I wanted to see a lot of shocked looks and a lot of shocked faces.
Yeah. Perfectly filmed scene. I think I originally voted for...
Oh, I think the thing is nobody saw Take Shelter because that was a movie that was not available streaming anywhere.
Yeah.
Some of us...
I mean, physical media.
I think I voted for MacGruber, honestly. I did.
I think I voted for Sheriff Bell Describes His Dreams, but...
That's a great ending to that movie. No question.
Fantastic.
But Take Shelter, a justified winner. The Dingo Award for Best Pet. Dingo is in this room, but he is dead to the world, so he did not perk up even a second when I said his name.
He's deaf.
The nominees are President Pierce the Terrier from The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, Brandy the Pit Bull from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Boras the Mutt in Roma, Quickie the German Shepherd in Raw, who eats a finger again, and SP/DR, or Spider, I guess, is how you pronounce that, from Spider-Man to the Spider-Verse. And our winner is President Pierce the Terrier, who gets his master shot in the face.
I went Quickie here, but I was really between Quickie and Spider.
I went with Brandy because she has quite a memorable scene.
Well, I haven't seen that. So.
Pair of scenes in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Our masturbating Kevin from We Need to Talk About Kevin Memorial Award for Most Uncomfortable Moment. And the nominees here are the Armstrong Family Farewell Dinner and First Man. Toller wraps himself in barbed wire from First Reformed. Frank and John perform at South by Southwest in Frank. Hair Vomit from Raw, pretty self-explanatory. Bikini Wax turns into fingering amputation, turns into cannibalism from Raw. And again, Curtis explodes at a community potluck dinner. And our winner is, again, a double winner, Curtis exploding at a community potluck dinner. For a movie that, again, we suspect that not many members of the Munich Movie Club actually watched. Take Shelter really cleaning up and good for it. That's a great movie.
This is a tough category too. I mean, like
yes, I think I went with Raw.
I
saw that movie in theaters when it was in theaters, and that was between the gasps and disgusted shrieks and serious considerations of leaving that the old people in the crowd, because I would have seen this in the afternoon. On a weekday. And people that go to movies in the afternoon on a weekday are fundamentally old people. And if you can imagine a better viewing audience to see Raw with than retirees, then I don't know what to tell you.
People at the movie theaters like watch all these old people walk in this movie. We've seen this. We know what's up. Just watching from above.
I mean, I had a goddamn blast But I very much watched that movie pressed back into my seat, that scene in particular. But again, Curtis exploding at a community potluck, also blows you back in your seat.
I'm a little taller here, but as I was thinking about here, I probably would have done the Bikini Wax. But
those are all of our joke awards, and our final two best performance our nominees here are Javier Bardem for No Country for Old Men, Josh Brolin from Inherent Vice, Michael Fassbender from Frank, Ethan Hawke from First Reformed, I choose to pronounce this as Garance Marillier from Raw, Michael Shannon from Take Shelter, and Haley Steinfeld from True Grit. And our winner here is Javier Bardem from No Country. Can't argue with that.
Yeah, it's possible.
It was
tough category.
It was tough to pick one from No Country for Old Men. It was one of the main three, but Josh Brolin got in there for Bigfoot Bjornsson, so I felt okay about that. Javier Bardem, like that. Yeah, yeah.
It's an all-timer.
Pretty iconic all-timer, yes. And our best film, First Man, First Reformed, Logan, No Country for Old Men, Spider-Man into the Spider-Verse, and Take Shelter. And the winner here is Logan.
I'm surprised.
Yeah, so am I. I like Logan a whole bunch, but I like most of those movies better.
I mean, I think I picked Logan. Logan was like specifically. It's
fair.
Me,
like, I'm not gonna argue. I'm not gonna argue with it. I think Logan is our current Mediocre Madness champion as well. So it's only fitting that it won the season 6 Mediocrity. So congrats to our winners.
All right.
And that ends season 6 of the Media Community Club, and season 7, persisting in the future. Like, it's good that we talked about Good Boys. As far as interest changing and people having less and less in common with each other as their lives drill down into laser points of, you know, legally being responsible for keeping people alive. Like, how many kids do we have in the Media Community Club right now? Like, a dozen? Something like that?
Yeah, does JR count as a child?
Ish. I mean, does Joe? So, you know, participation has steadily nosedived. Over the years, it's pretty much just me these days, and I gotta tell you, Media Community Club fans, if there's one thing I really don't like, it's the feeling that you're dragging something along single-handedly, like you're badgering people into doing something. But I really like talking about movies, and writing about movies is a hobby that I've put just, the sunk costs are too much to walk away, so we're gonna have a season 7. We're going to continue. I mean, I'm not going to lie when I say that Weebly reconfiguring our statistics from an obviously false, but at least the number was there, low thousands, 1,400, down to a certainly true number, and was certainly true the whole time, 20-something. Like that, you know, that hurts your feelings. But I don't know. That's not why we're doing this. That's not why we're ever doing this.
Like, we're going to our SEO game, too.
I guess. I don't have any talent for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, neither do I. Or patience.
I thought for sure when I took over the Twitter account that I was going to tweet more, and I do not.
Yeah.
I'm not good at that game. As sharp and pithy as we are on the Media Community Club podcast, it's just hard to put that in the tweet form.
Someone described Twitter pretty well earlier, saying like it's the only place where you can meet really funny people, some of the smartest people in the world. But 90% of the people you come across are the worst fucking people.
Yeah.
It's depressing.
I mean, yeah, I, for the same reason I go to various lectures around Atlanta, I like watching smart people discuss things, but I don't have a lot to offer.
Yeah. But it's better you don't offer as opposed to say some stuff.
Oh, yeah. Like, if you go to enough Carter Center events, you're going to hear a lot of first-person monologues about their lives before they ask some author a question.
I see.
Or don't. Maybe they just don't get to a question.
It's a good thing I don't go to these things, because I cannot help myself in those situations where someone is talking and won't shut the fuck up. I'm just like, yeah, all right.
Yeah, sometimes it's real bad.
So,
We hope that's not us. I hope... And I say I because, again, it is increasingly just me that writes on the website. I hope that I have turned on somebody to a great movie or kept someone away from a terrible movie.
I mean, just speaking for me alone, like, this is 100% broaden my movie horizons doing this, even though I don't write anymore. But it might be the place. Might be time to start writing again. Unfortunately, Game of Thrones last episode fucking just killed my entire drive to do anything creative. Because I know I need to write that. Still have to write the last episode of Shade of Thrones. But it was so bad. It's like, I'm like, God damn it.
I think it's helpful. I've had this book sitting on my shelf, Criticism as a Guide. No, wait, what is it? Better Living Through Criticism by A.O. Scott, who's the New York Times film critic. He is a film critic. He wants to, you know, justify his existence as much as anybody else does. But I do feel like being able to evaluate a thing is an important skill. And be able to interrogate why you do or do not like something is a way into self-knowledge. And that's increasingly the way that I write my movie reviews in the first place, is interrogating my reactions to a movie. Why did I have them? Why didn't I have them? I don't know. It's a form of therapy. If I could get something out of Good Boys, not to shit on Good Boys, it wasn't a terrible movie by any means, but I got, you know, some good stuff out of that movie, and I wouldn't have if I wasn't, like, really interrogating this movie that I could have very easily just laughed off as a movie with a bunch of dildo and anal bead pranks, which in a way it was.
Yay!
So, yeah, we're going to keep doing this. I think we're going to keep doing it on this format. It's low intensity. This is a fun hobby. Maybe I go back to dictatorial mode and just say, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
And these are the people that are in the club now. Really grateful for whoever listens, for those iTunes reviews that people have written over the years. This is something we've been doing for a long time now.
6 years.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. So we really thank you for listening, for reading. And we're gonna keep this up. God, that sounded defeatist. We're gonna keep providing you with, hopefully, you know, a way into finding, you know, something good on Netflix or something good at Videodrome if you live in Atlanta.
Hell yeah!
There's a lot of good movies out there.
There are.
Yeah.
It's probably too many.
And occasionally we watch them. Yes. Sometimes we watch Mary Poppins Returns instead.
Let's stop doing that. Let's stop.
Maybe I just say no to certain things.
We're gonna do it.
Maybe what I have to do as the main contributor is find a way into exactly what I want to do here.
Yeah.
Maybe that.
Everyone's got it right. Yeah,
we've got end of the decade stuff coming up. I have been contemplating a top 100 for, you know, a long time. If it pops into my head, I'll think about it. I've been doing a lot of catch-up. I want to do a lot of stuff about the best of the decade. Because, you know, 10 years of film has gone by. And there's a lot of hidden gems in there. And it's been a lot of fun rewatching certain stuff. And, like, moving stuff up and down in my ever-evolving list. And, you know, undergoing the Chinese water torture of deciding what to cut out of your arbitrary ranking. So, yeah, there are projects. And we hope that you'll stick around and listen with us and contribute and push back. And, you know, the main thing is we just want to talk about movies.
Yeah, criticize.
Talk about movies, talk about TV.
Tell us we're full of shit.
I would welcome it.
Facebook or our website.
Yes.
Please.
Yeah. Tell me I'm full of shit. I would love that.
Which you are, to be clear.
That'll do us for this episode of the Media Movie Club podcast. You can follow us. You can read reviews of all of these movies that we talked about and many, many more at MuticMovie.club. Like us on Facebook at Mutic Movie Club. Follow us on Twitter at Mutic Movie Cole. We'll try and tweet more. Try and do more stuff. Try and get more. Again, this is not the point. The point is not clicks and likes. The point is just to talk about movies.
But give us that dopamine with those likes.
God, I don't want to be captured, but it's hard not to be. Thank you for joining me tonight, Shane.
Thanks, John.
Have a good night.